Coming up on Fronteras, in recent years, hundreds of Mexican migrants have died trying to get into the U.S. through the deserts of Texas and Arizona. But even as attention has shifted east, in California, volunteers are still trying to prevent deaths in their desert.
It was very disheartening to have these four guys die. Disheartening, so we decided to go stack a lot more water in here.
We profile a group of desert humanitarians in California's scorching Imperial Valley. Also, the Affordable Care Act requires citizens to get health insurance or pay penalties later on, unless they're Native American. That has some health professionals worried many Native people could be left behind.
Even just paying $40, $60 for medications was like a really big decision I had to make.
Problems facing the urban Indian population and the Affordable Care Act. Coming up, but first, the news. This is Fronteras, a journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras was created through an unprecedented multimedia collaboration among seven public radio stations. I'm Crystal Chavez. Every 2 weeks, a group of volunteers has been going out into the Imperial Valley to leave water for the migrants who try to cross the Mexico border in California's unforgiving desert. Fronteras reporter Adrian Florido accompanied the volunteers on a recent trip, and he filed this profile.
The day begins at 8 a.m., when about a dozen volunteers with a group called Water Station gather at a little roadside cafe in the tiny, dusty town of Ocotillo in the Imperial Valley, about 90 miles east of San Diego. These volunteers leave water at 150 different locations in the desert between here and Yuma. Frank Hollingshead is the group's president.
So every 2 weeks we come out and we divvy up the routes. We go out and check every barrel.
Before taking off, the volunteers load boxes into their cars and trucks. Each box contains 6 1-gallon bottles of water. Then they disperse across the desert. I ride along in a pickup truck with John Hunter, his wife Laura, and another volunteer. Hunter founded this group in 2000 after reading about the many migrant deaths in the Imperial Valley each year. In a twist of irony, his brother is Duncan Hunter, the former anti-immigrant congressman from this area. His nephew is Duncan Jr., the current congressman. But Hunter says politics don't get in the way of his work.
I'm very right-wing, actually. I believe in a strong military. I went in Iraq 3 times putting armor on vehicles, and I believe in killing terrorists, and I'm also for waterboarding. But I just don't think you should be really cruel to innocent people in letting women and men die in the desert.
We come to the entrance of a narrow pass that winds between 2 hills rising on either side.
This is called Carrizo Creek, and it goes up about 7 miles, and then the trail stops. But it's a pretty deadly area. Depends on what the migrant patterns are.
This pass is a popular route for migrants because it ends at a 2-lane road 15 miles north of the border fence where migrants can get picked up. But it's a slow, rocky, dangerous trek. During summer months, it can top 120 degrees. It's so remote, there's no cell coverage. Several migrants have taken their last breaths here.
Here we go. This is our first station.
We stop at a blue plastic barrel. Hunter removes a lid held in place by a rock. He bends down into the barrel and removes several empty jugs of water.
Oh, guess what, Laurelina? We had some usage.
Wow. Oh, we did.
We used a lot of it. We need 2 6-packs here.
They replaced the water, and we're on our way to the next barrel, about a half mile away. The deeper we go into the pass, the more rugged the terrain becomes. In the early days, Hunter and his wife Laura, who was then just a friend and is a Mexican immigrant, did much of this work themselves with just 1 or 2 other volunteers.
Because we didn't have any help in those years. We had 340 water stations. So, you know, sometimes it will be the sun will be going down and we will still working because we needed to cover all those water stations.
More recently, they've downsized to just 150 stations, placed in the most dangerous areas of the desert. It's partly because they lack resources, but also because fewer migrants are crossing in the Imperial Valley. As the Border Patrol presence has surged here and the border fence has gotten taller, more migrants are trying their luck in Arizona and Texas, where death tolls are reaching the hundreds. And yet, migrants are still dying in the Imperial Valley, too. At least 10 from heat exhaustion this year. At one water station, John and Laura Hunter walk over to a tall shrub. In the summer of 2008, a young migrant's body was found in its shade.
His body was here.
He was one of four young men who died in this pass on the same day.
We didn't have enough water at the stations when these guys came through, and so it was very disheartening to have these four guys die. And disheartening, so we decided to go stack a lot more water in here. Even then, we're almost running out, because must have been a group that went through here in the last 2 weeks.
This is the group's second-to-last trip of the year. Their permits from the Federal Bureau of Land Management only allow them to have water stations out from March through October. And so on October 26th, the water station's volunteers will fan out across the Imperial Desert and remove all 150 barrels of water until March, when they'll go out and set them all back up again. In San Diego, I'm Adrian Florido.
Health departments in the Southwest are beginning to see some of the first flu cases of the season. Officials warn that there are many populations at higher risk for health complications for the flu. Tristan Autone reports one high-risk group is Native Americans, but the reason why isn't fully understood.
Each year, between 5 and 20% of the nation comes down with the flu, with thousands of hospitalizations and even deaths. Some of the highest risk populations are people of any age with chronic illnesses such as diabetes or lung disease, people over the age of 50, and Native Americans.
The American Indian Alaska Native population has been shown to be at risk of influenza-related complications and even to have higher death rates.
Joan Bombeck is an epidemiologist with the New Mexico Department of Health.
It's not just American Indians in the United States, but that's been seen in other American Indian Alaska Native populations in other countries as well.
Bombeck says it's not clear why Native Americans are at higher risk. However, with the state's Native population at around 10% and similarly high populations in Arizona and California, officials are encouraging people to get vaccinated. In Albuquerque, I'm Tristan Autone.
The Affordable Care Act's new insurance marketplaces are open for business, although with some technical glitches. But millions of eligible shoppers don't speak much English, so signing up comes with extra challenges. From the Fronteras desk in Phoenix, Jude Jaffe Block reports.
If you're in California and call the hotline for help enrolling in the new insurance marketplace, the greeting sounds like this.
Welcome. You have reached Cover California General Information Line. For English, press 1.
Para español, oprime el 2.
And the language options keep going. In Cantonese, Vietnamese, there are 13 different language choices. These multilingual greetings are just one of the ways California is trying to help non-English speakers as they enroll in the new healthcare options. After all, figuring out insurance is intimidating even if you speak English perfectly, says Ian John of the Asian and Pacific Islander American Health Forum in San Francisco.
So those individuals that speak different languages need to have the same opportunities as those that speak English really well.
And census data shows that non-English speakers are far more likely to be uninsured than the general population. California has a private health endowment that's putting tens of millions of dollars toward ethnic media to educate that audience about expanded Medicaid. And because the state is running its own marketplace, it got significant federal funds to do outreach. But this isn't the case everywhere.
California had more money available to do the targeted type of outreach that is not going to happen in many of the other states.
States like Arizona that are using the federally run marketplace, for example, couldn't qualify for many of the federal grants California got. That means limited funds for outreach in English, let alone other languages. Arizona community groups can afford to hire only about 100 so-called navigators to help sign up the state's 1 million uninsured.
I have a feeling it's going to be very challenging.
Yen Nguyen is one of the few navigators in the state that speaks an Asian language, in her case, Vietnamese. She also leads a Phoenix organization dedicated to helping Asians and Pacific Islanders get health care.
You know, they probably will be relying on our agency, which we don't have a lot of volunteers.
And Nguyen has already found that there's a lot of confusion in the Vietnamese community about what the Affordable Care Act does, much less how to enroll.
So far, a marketplace. You know, like, it's very hard to translate.
That would be the online marketplace where people can now buy and compare insurance. But Nguyen says not everyone in the immigrant community has understood it that way.
A lot of people thought is where you go, you know, like a store where you go and you shop. Then I was told that, you know, like from the community that they found somewhere, the translation basically saying, literally say grocery store.
Hola, María Elena.
Of course, the biggest group of non-English speakers shopping in the new online marketplaces are those who speak Spanish. The federal government's website had planned to have a Spanish language application available October 1st, but it's been delayed a few weeks. Nationally, there are about 4 million Spanish speakers who will be eligible, according to federal estimates. These include legal immigrants and naturalized citizens.
Muchas gracias por venir. Dígame, ¿qué le podemos ayudar hoy?
Livier Pearson is a Spanish-speaking navigator who works for Phoenix-based Keio Health Connection. She's greeting an uninsured client, 60-year-old María Elena Frisbee.
Pues vengo a hacer la aplicación para ver a qué tipo de aseguranza califico.
Frisbee has come to find out what kind of health care coverage she qualifies for.
¿Me puede dar su ID, por favor?
Though Frisbee specifically requested to have this appointment in Spanish, her English is actually quite good. But she says she prefers her native Spanish for topics like health insurance.
It's easier, you know. If it's in your language, it's always easier.
She says part of her goal today is to bring back information about the new healthcare options to her Spanish-speaking friends and relatives.
They don't even know what's going on. They don't know.
Which means there will be a lot of work to be done in the next several months to get this population enrolled. In Phoenix, I'm Jude Joffe Block.
There's still more Fronteras. Coming up, a look at problems facing the urban Indian population and the Affordable Care Act.
Even just paying $40, $60 for medications was like a really big decision I had to make, because that money I could have used for food.
Stay tuned. This is Fronteras. I'm Crystal Chavez. Beginning January 1st, most Americans will be required to have health insurance or pay penalties under the Affordable Care Act. Native Americans are one of just a few groups that won't be fined if they don't buy insurance. But as Tristan Ottone reports, that exemption means the status quo for a big part of Indian country, high health disparities, and no access to care.
In June, Delana Otherbowl was laid off. She lost her insurance and turned to the Indian Health Service for her needs.
I recently had a miscarriage, and it was very devastating for me. And going and following up and making sure that everything is okay, and it was really scary because I didn't have insurance.
Indian Health Service regulations essentially require tribal members to get medical help in their own home state. Otherbowl's problem issues Crow and Northern Cheyenne from Montana, getting a graduate degree from the University of New Mexico in Albuquerque.
I also had to get some testing done, and they said that I would actually have to go to my reservation in Montana to get seen.
And her prescriptions? The Albuquerque Indian Health Service told her they wouldn't cover those either. She eventually put them on her credit card.
Even just paying, you know, $40, $60 for medications was like a really big decision I had to make, because that money I could have used for food or, you know, something like school-type related expenses.
Since 1955, the Indian Health Service has been the primary source of health care to Native Americans living near their reservations free of charge. However, statistics show that since the 1970s, Native Americans have been migrating from reservations to urban areas of the country. The 2010 census puts the urban Indian population at over 70%, and those cities usually don't have Indian health services to serve that population.
There's certainly a subset of the urban Indian community that has historically been uninsured for a variety of different reasons.
Ralph Ferreira is executive director for the Seattle Indian Health Board.
A big part of that is due to the high poverty experienced by the Native community in most large metropolitan areas, and the fact that that precludes them to some degree from getting access to the insurance marketplace.
Under the Affordable Care Act, tribal members have a choice. If they live in areas not served by the Indian Health Service or don't have insurance through work, they can get covered through the ACA. But with no penalty for not signing up, Native Americans can forego coverage and take their chances. Maria Clark is director of the Jemez Pueblo Health and Human Services Department in New Mexico. She says this makes some health professionals nervous.
It is a very worrisome area, and there's a lot of urban areas.
Jemez Pueblo is one of 22 pueblos and tribes in the state. The pueblo has a modern clinic for tribal members, but if one of their citizens leaves the area, perhaps to Los Angeles or New York, it's likely they'll no longer have access to Indian health services.
So in the marketplace or the exchange, it would be up to them if they wanted to sign up for insurance on their own, because they would be no longer covered by health services here at the pueblo. And then their decision would be left entirely up to them if they wanted to pay those premiums.
And if they decide not to?
They might find themselves uninsured and in trouble health-wise and facing a large bill.
Like Delana Otherbull in Albuquerque.
Right now I don't have health insurance. It's crappy. My credit cards are maxed out. I'm barely making it by, but it's a struggle that I'm choosing.
Otherbull says it's her goal in the next 4 to 6 months to get insurance through a job or the Affordable Care Act. But she adds that she may be in the minority when it comes to urban natives making health coverage a priority. In Albuquerque, I'm Tristan Autown.
This is you. These are your parents. And these are their parents. Before that, it gets a little fuzzy. That's where we come in. Our genealogy experts are crossing the country.
That's amazing.
Solving the mysteries of family histories.
Yeah.
Don't miss the all-new Genealogy Roadshow.
PBS's new Genealogy Roadshow is a twist on Antique Roadshow. The show's detective work using history and science unveils fascinating stories of diverse Americans. The next Austin episode features a woman with a whole lot of Texas pride and strong ties to San Antonio. Denise Thusloff told me she's always wondered about her family's true roots, and Genealogy Roadshow took her on the emotional journey of her life.
My dad has done years and years of research on our genealogy and told us a bunch of really cool stories, but he didn't have any hard proof, any hard evidence. So I thought, well, you know, maybe these guys at the Genealogy Roadshow could, you know, really confirm and validate some of the information that my father had found.
So what had your father uncovered about your past?
So my father had found a couple things, one which was very important is that we were related to Spanish Jews that came to the Americas that were running away from the Spanish Inquisition. So it came here to escape. They're called crypto Jews. We had pretty much embraced the Jewish faith in our family and practice, not really practice, but celebrate Jewish holidays like Hanukkah in our family. And he had come to these conclusions but had no hard proof. So that's what I was looking for, because my sister is actually raising her children in the Jewish faith. So it was very important to know for sure that, you know, religion is whatever you accept into your own faith, but to know for sure that we were actually Spanish Jews.
Right. Faith is a big part of the show, and also it really comes through your Texas pride. You know, a lot of people who are from Texas have this big heart of Texas pride, and you definitely have that. That was another big part of your journey through your past, right?
Yes. One of the things that I was curious about, because I'm from San Antonio originally. Let me back up and say I'm originally from San Antonio. And you grow up with the Texas mythology of the Alamo and Davy Crockett and Sam Houston, but you don't hear a lot about the Hispanic contribution, Tejano contribution to Texas and Texas history and our fight for independence from Mexico. And growing up as a little girl and hearing all this, you don't ever really hear about the Tejano aspect. So I wanted to know if I was qualified as a daughter of the Republic of Texas. It was just a little girl's dream for me.
Now, maybe without, I'm not sure how much you want to give away, but what was one of the most surprising things you learned?
One of the most surprising things that I learned, well, I won't give away too much, but the role of DNA and how important DNA is becoming in the field and fascinating, especially one of the things that's not really talked about in the show is how much Native American DNA I actually have. Just really threw me for a loop. It's not really discussed on the show, but when I got the results, it really was exciting and makes me even more curious about that line and how little I know about my Native American heritage.
Now on the show, will we find out if you are tied to the Daughters of the Republic?
We might.
Keeping the lips sealed for now, huh?
Well,
let me ask you this. You find out so much about your past on this show. How does this change you? You're still the same person you always were, but does this have an impact on how you will live and what you will tell others in your family, maybe children from here on out?
Yes, I mean, it'll just solidify the real Texas pride that I have. And, for example, my 9-year-old nephew was at the show, at the filming. Now, he is so excited about history and learning. So it's something that hard proof that we can say we were a part of this nation, this state's proud history, and we have a lot to be proud of. Especially, like I said, for Hispanic Americans, there's not as much out there for us to look to, but I can say, look, you have a long, very proud history in this state, in this country, and, you know, you are a part, you're a very important part of this world, and I think everybody is. I think one of the great things about the Roadshow is that everybody's family played some role in history, so we're all important, and we all have reasons to be proud.
That was Denise Suslov. You can watch her family story revealed on PBS's Genealogy Roadshow on Monday. Find more information at pbs.org. You've been listening to Fronteras, a journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras is a collaboration of public radio stations KJZZ Phoenix, KPBS San Diego, KNAU Flagstaff, KNPR Las Vegas, KRWG Las Cruces, KUAZ Tucson, and KSTX San Antonio. We're online at fronterasdesk.org. We're also on Facebook, and we invite you to join the conversations. Post your thoughts about our stories. For headlines and updates, follow us on Twitter at fronterasdesk. You may subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Our theme music was composed by Charanga Cakewalk. I'm Texas Public Radio's Crystal Chavez. Thanks for listening.